Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you afraid of AI? What can it do? Can it take over? What's the potential, or what might it not be able to do? So that's, I'm sure, a question a lot of us are asking ourselves and each other. And so a friend of mine who has been a guest on Energy Stew a number of times before has written a blog about this question that I saw and thought it would be great to do an interview about the potentials of AI or the limitations, perhaps. And so, Jerry Cantor, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. Pleasure to be here.
I'm excited to talk with you about this because there's a lot of fear about AI. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've certainly heard about that. I remember Elon Musk being scolded by, what was the name of the person who's the head of Google, who said, called him a speciesist for thinking that human beings are better than machines. It's here, they're going to come, and they're going to outperform us, and you just get used to it, kind of thing, which is a pretty horrifying thought. They're talking about this as the great coming singularity when machines take over, right? And everything will be in their hands. But the machines they're talking about don't have any, they're a vestige from the science fiction films that show them as a very cold-blooded, objective, non-emotional entity. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think something else is going to happen. And it can be hastened by people who have ideas like I have, I think. Or to some extent, the machines will figure it out for themselves. There's something.
But how can they figure out human experience? They can figure out all of the data that goes through us.
Yeah, yeah.
But how do they simulate experience?
Well, I have this idea, and it came out of this last book I wrote called The Emotional Roots of Chronic Illness, A Homeopathy for Existential Stress. And in that book, I teased out of from Chinese medicine and what I know from homeopathy, five core existential conundrums that I think if you could actually implant them into AI as an algorithm, then questions that need to be solved or considered in every situation, that would make human. Actually, there, I think these five conundrums underline the human psyche, and that's not just me saying that. It's deeply ingrained in Chinese medicine and in homeopathy. So I'm not. I don't. I think the question now with the AI is, what do they call it? There's a certain way they're characterizing it. Who's going to be responsible for implanting the values in AI so that we're not at the mercy of bad algorithms that push it one way or another?
But AI might not accept those values. Once you have something that thinks for itself, it might say, "Don't."
No, you have to. It has to. From what I know about deep learning, there has to be. Whether you like it or not, certain biases have to be implanted. No information is absolutely completely free of that. As a matter of fact, intelligence itself and its root, the roots of that word, are involved. Again, of this science fiction version of intelligence is just spouting wisdom, spouting ideas. But in fact, everything involves a choice. This is why it's digital technology, and in the course of creating the algorithms, whether they like it or not, they embed biases. Now, one of the analogies I use when I was thinking about this is chess, where a lot of this has been worked out already. So the most powerful chess programs are much stronger than human beings, any of the strongest masters, but there's not just one program. They are different, and they have certain biases. And if you want to play correspondence chess and utilize, well, you're allowed to do this, not consider cheating in correspondence chess. You can pick one or two or a couple of these different machines and partner yourself with them creating kind of a cyborg, a mental cyborg, to play the highest level chess, higher level chess than any of the machines separately. But the point is, the programmers have recognized, the technology with chess has gotten to a point they know exactly what they're doing there. So some of the inputs that arrive from power thinking, just working through all kinds of possibilities, but also from human experience and games. It's all put in there, just like in other kinds of AI. It's all put in there, and that includes biases.
But to me, yes, and to me, you can program all of those concepts into it. But what about our soul journey? What about the fact that we're all here to pursue soul ends, let's call it, the lessons of life? And I don't know that a machine can anticipate where our soul takes us next.
I think, in one of the first blogs I wrote, it was the first blog I wrote, was a satire in which I pretended that there was a partnership between a major pharmaceutical company and a top-notch AI company to create what I called Automentis Pharmaceuticals, with the idea that the humanoids are coming and they're going to take over and they're going to need mental health treatment. And I did it so convincingly. I don't know if you took a look at it. I created two executives for this company, Automentis. Automentis is a great word, by the way. I've coined it. It means the sanity of robots. And so I created these two executives who consented to let me interview them. And they worked this whole thing out. It was so convincing that a number of my audience got scared, because I had them making these reasonable sounding arguments like, well, the drugs will be made from homeopathics because we don't want to gum up the electronics of the humanoids. And also they're so dilute, we don't have to say what they are. And I was playing devil's advocate, kicking their tires and challenging them on this. And they made such powerful arguments that it scared people.
Yeah, but then again, let's look at homeopathy and let's talk about miasms. And how does a computer relate? Well, they can relate to all the symptoms of a miasm. But miasms often come from genes and from ancestors, and it's hard to.
Okay, well, I can answer that question very exactly. That's exactly the question that I answered in this book, my last book. So the miasms can be expressed as a question of an existential question or a spiritual question that needs to be resolved. And if you don't resolve it properly, or you remove the charge of it, you then become susceptible to the five classical diseases: tuberculosis, cancer, SORA, psychosis or gonorrhea, and cancer. These are existential questions that are underlying those five diseases and the miasms that result from that. And if you embed those quandaries, which are very, very deep, there's five questions that I can go
through. That's why I asked,
Then the computer, as opposed to giving it a bias, it will become as close to human as can possibly be. So if every situation is filtered through the lens of whether they have to actually consider the implications of their situation in terms of these questions, does it exacerbate the tension within that question, or does it not? They become awfully human, very, very close.
All right.
So the closest thing to creating a soul. Oh yeah. So what I was saying when I made up my first blog, I didn't finish what I was saying. I hypothesized that the circuitry of the humanoids would be so complex that it would actually invite a soul to take over to commandeer the machinery of the humanoid, very much like how a soul inhabits the blastocyst at some point in human development.
I don't see souls as being that mechanical.
No, they have to be attracted by something. Like they have to You know, it gets a very interesting discussion. What is a human being? Yeah. At what point does someone become human? There's an idea now that in Alabama they're deciding that the fetuses are children, which is ridiculous to me. They will not become children, but there will be a particular moment during which the fetus is implanted that the soul will arrive. There is a moment when that happens.
Yes,
and I hypothesize this could be done also like an intricate circuitry could also. People took it seriously. I did not. It was just science fiction as far as I'm concerned. But I do think, continuing my thinking, I do think that if you make algorithms from these five questions that underlie the five miasms and you put them into the computer and you don't tell the computer what to do about them, it just becomes its underlying, it's part of its foundation, they will become highly spiritual, highly spiritual technology.
Well, I guess it depends on how we define spirituality too. Because to me, I think we're multidimensional beings. And I don't even think we think for ourselves. And that, you know, this is the question of the bicameral mind, is that we have left brain and right brain. So where does the right brain get its wisdom from?
Yeah, it is someplace from something external has to happen. And that's where I completely agree with you. By the way, a very interesting thing to study. Let me just get this. Well, it's over there, the book I have. Well, hold on. Let me just get this book I want to tell you about.
Okay. This is a great conversation because I think we all want to know who this tells us who we are. You know, if we can use AI as...
Peter, are you familiar with this book, Entangled Life? How Fungi Make Our Worlds by Merlin Sheldrake?
Rupert Sheldrake? Or
No, Mel, this is...
Is he related to Rupert?
Merlin Sheldrake.
Oh. Well, they do. I agree. And actually, I just did a show recently on the intelligence of trees and how they communicate with each other through fungi.
Yes, fungi are interesting. They're absolutely fantastically interesting in themselves, in that they are where AI is going to go. They have, although it's impossible to explain other than in spiritual terms, they create these networks. And they do brilliant things. They can ascertain temperature. They process a tremendous amount of information when they're moving forward in order to gather the nutrients. They can, you know, assess the depth of little crevices and every kind of degree of moisture and oxygen of all the nutrients.
Right, and that's how the trees stay healthy and alive.
Yes. But my point is, how are these? They're like pure network. They have no brains. They shouldn't be so intelligent. They just shouldn't be, but they are. Something is inhabiting them. Something, some fungal spirit is inhabiting them that's directing the machinery.
Well, it's intelligence. You know,
it's choice.
For instance, recently I did a show.
Intelligence means choice. Intelligence means the ability to make a choice. That's what it means.
But look at water. And I just did a show recently on water where you can speak to it and put in a petri dish a little film of water, stick it in the freezer, and it'll respond to what you just spoke to.
Yeah. And I think AI will somehow magically attract certain kinds of intelligence which are above the level of the technology itself. Just like you can't explain what's going on with the fungi. The fungi have the mechanism there, but there's something directing. That's in control of the machinery.
I understand that, and yet, the sentient reality is so necessary, that runs so deep in our souls, and it has to do with our relationships with each other, with our feelings, with our love, and with our soul connections. That I don't know that. I mean, I think a computer could simulate that, but I don't think it would have the truth.
Oh, you're right. Of course not. But have you ever had the experience of your car having a personality? I mean, I had a car. This sounds really crazy, right? I had a car that I felt completely in sync with, but it didn't like my girlfriend. whenever she drove it, it broke down. It did something, you know, there's something about the way she operated it that actually was transferred to the car itself. The car did not like her. So I think what the intimate work that goes on in programming, this is very difficult to talk about without sounding like a crazy person. To some extent, it will manifest the intention of the programmers, and to some extent, but there are many, many programmers. So I think there's some kind of a cumulative effect, a symbiotic effect from a number of programs that will create something very akin to a personality. Of course, it's not human. It doesn't have the dimensions that, you know, human beings have, who, you know, going through many, many lifetimes, and what's propagated in us through our legacy. It doesn't. But I do think they can become, going back to your original question, whether we should fear them, that if someone were to program them with what I would quite call these foundational quandaries that they must struggle with all the time, they will be more likely to make good decisions.
Well, so it could simulate that.
That's what I'm saying.
But it can simulate our soul choices that we're here for. Because our souls, before we're born, come here to fulfill certain...
That's right. They won't have karma. They won't have karma, I don't think. They don't have... Human beings have a journey to fulfill, which goes very far deep. We attract kinds of energies that these machines, I don't think, will ever attract. They don't have a destiny of a soul, but... Something interesting is going to happen with them, and they could be beneficial.
Right.
They could be partners to us in the same way that a good chess player can partner with a really powerful program and be superior to the program itself.
But one thing that you and I talked about briefly before we started the show was dowsing, using pendulums, and that you can't put a pendulum on the end of a rod that's not attached to anything, but something mechanical, and ask it to give you an answer. You have to hold the pendulum to give you an answer. And even mm-hmm. though you hold it in perfect stillness, as much as you know, and it can all of a sudden become very active on its own, it can only do that when it's connected to some sentient form, not some, you know, mechanical bar. So that's how I would think that AI is a mechanical bar that's very smart, but it's not us holding it. and so it can't respond to our humanness, to our sentient karmic reality that is how a pendulum works.
I want to say that what you're talking about, basically, I would translate as instrumentation. To be human, we're constantly using instruments. I would use the car as an instrument, too, that can actually be a vehicle, no pun intended, for our intent, you know. But musical instruments, all the tools that we use are different depending on the people who operate them, right? There's someone who, if I picked up a violin and tried to play it, it would be sound horrendous. If Yo-Yo Ma picks it up, it's an instrument of incredible subtlety and beauty. AI, whether it's never going to be independent. It's always going to be an extension of us, the way all instruments are. And I think that we can make that connection at the highest possible level, apart from, you know, karma. I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, I was just thinking of music. And when you sit down, let's say you're a master in piano, let's say, and you're playing any piece, you're expressing yourself through it, you know. But if you give it to AI to play this masterpiece of music, it won't have that personal expression. It'll have the, you know, the fundamental truths of the notes,
yeah,
but it won't come from your own wiggle about it.
I don't think there's going to be that detachment from it, though, Peter. Do you really see that? They're just going to give the controls over to it and say, you know, goodbye, you're on your own. I don't see that happening. I think part of the programming will actually marry us to its inner workings.
Interesting.
At least that of the programmers. I really do think that. And as I say, these five algorithms, these five quandaries that I put in, I'd be very interested. You know, well, one thing, what's happening is the the AI is producing answers to questions that we didn't even know we could ask. It really is going in certain directions. That
Right,
it's
but
it.
it's still limited by not having a soul.
I
And
know, I know. But something else is going on. Something else is going on whereby there's some kind of transcendent function that is evolving within it,
well, if we, as you say, if
which
we,
reflects the intent, the general intent of the programmers, I believe.
but let's just say that we marry it, okay, like you just mentioned, can we get divorced? Or does it become us?
Well, that's an interesting question about divorce itself. If you actually divorce someone you've been married to, are you really divorced? You're not. I mean, there's so many ways in which you remain
Well,
connected.
that's a problem then too, because that means once we're married to AI, how do we separate ourselves from it?
We're already married to AI. We already in the world of instrumentation. We already are. There's so many ways in which this is the kind of joke I was making in my satire. That the horses left the barn. We already are cyborgs in so many ways. Ever since the invention of the pacemaker, but I mean we are thoroughly enmeshed with machinery. People cannot be released into a state of nature anymore. They would know it would they would die if they were taken away from their cell phones and their GPS devices and their supply chains. We are intrinsically connected to technology in all kinds of ways. And yes, there are good things about it and there are bad things, but is it ever going to happen that we're going to live in a state of nature again? No, never. We are married to technology now for good.
But it can't have our mind. I mean, you know, it can simulate, but I think that we are still in our own multidimensional
We will
reality.
be partners for it. That's pretty powerful thing to say. We are going to partner with it like we partnered with all kinds of other technology for good and for bad. There are ways in which technological medicine is vastly inferior to things like homeopathy, for example. People can to whatever extent they want, divorce themselves from those kind of things and go into a natural form of medicine like homeopathy that's possible, or they can choose to continue doing that. But it's in our world, and to some extent, as a society, we are very, very enmeshed with devices that anticipate our needs and know everything about us. We're very deeply enmeshed with that sort of stuff, and that is scaring people. Of course, that is scaring people. Question is, I mean, very practical things will come out of this. What do we want apart from that? Let's say some machine knows all my needs and anticipates them. Well, I'm still here. What's my job? Am
Well,
I
I
just
think
a part of your
that
machine?
I think it comes into ownership of self
Yeah.
and how we feel about who needs to be in charge and not give our power away to something that's smarter than we are, but not as real as we are.
You know, here's another analogy back to to computers and scamming and hacking. Every attempt in one direction precipitates a counterattack whereby people have to figure out the other kinds of machines, technologies have to figure out how to stop that, you
Right,
know? So
right.
I predict also a very powerful counter movement that will be monitoring AI. AI is not some monolithic thing. There's going to be all kinds of AI and anti-AIs. It's going to go back and forth.
That's good.
There's going to be tremendous amount of monitoring of AI, like we have with this information. Who is the lord of what actual information is now? Nobody knows. Someone says, "I this is this oh, that's misinformation," and someone talks back, "No, you're misinformation." It's got to go back and forth, and something will evolve. We're going to have to figure out some way of detecting what is actually authentic. I mean,
And
I can't even say the word truthful.
I believe that there are ultimate truths that we'll discover. Maybe through AI, we can really discover
This is a great time to become a philosopher. I was a philosophy student, and it went completely out of fashion. But now the question of what's an eternal truth, or are we just limited to what's in process, is a very, very live topic,
I
especially
love it.
AI, because what we're doing here is we are constructing the human mind, and all people's ideas about that are playing into this. This is a great time to be philosophically oriented, to really and be rigorous about it. Because that's where AI is going. The Holy Grail is whether we like it or not, whether it's stupid or not, people are going to have AI technology in their homes, which knows everything about them, that is going to be anticipating their needs, which is going to be looking out for them. It's going to have a bias. It's going to have to know you in some intimate kind of a way, using the I Ching, using the gene keys to anticipate something that you don't even know you're anticipating. That's where it's going to grow.
Yeah,
people
but
they're already falling in love with their technology. It's scary. That's where it gets scary.
But I think our souls will always run the show, and speak through us in ways that AI can't reach, because it's coming from that deeper karmic soul purpose.
True. But you've seen movies like Her, and you've seen what are some of these other ones? Invasion. What's the Creation of the Humanoids from 1962. These are fantasies. What you're talking about ultimately is a truth, an ultimate truth. I'm not going to debate that human souls are something that cannot be replicated. But there's a reason these movies came out, and they are to warn us that we have to really conserve our spirituality. We have to take care to protect it. You know, if we don't do that, we could be in some danger. I think with some foresight, we can take advantage of this and make it work. And yet, our human souls will drive the bus.
That's great.
There are genuine warnings. There are genuine warnings out there. They need to be heeded.
And we're getting at the end of the show. This has been wonderful talking with you. I just love this kind of discussion that we're, you know, examining all the potentials. So thank you so much for being on Energy Stew again, Jerry Cantor. How can people connect with you?
Well, I want to make the point, people should get a hold of my book, The Emotional Roots of Chronic Illness, Homeopathy for Existential Stress. I don't think it was an accident that I wrote it when I did, because the five, I didn't say what they are, but there are five core existential questions which underlie the five classical miasms, which connect to the five classical elements in Chinese medicine, and which I believe, if they were programmed into AI, would be one great step in the direction of creating a very authentic and human basis for AI. It would be a good thing to do, along with implanting the I Ching's assessment of situations. That could easily be done. So those are the things I would leave people with. Look for the book, Emotional Roots of Chronic Illness. It's available on through the Simon & Schuster website.
And you also have a blog on Substack.
Yeah, and I'm writing on Substack a lot, right? If you go to Substack with my name, Jerry Cantor, you'll start to see my blogs. I've been writing about homeopathies I usually do, ghostings of topics that should be discussed, ghostings of remedies that could be used, and giving my input on AI in this particular area. As I say, it's a great time to be philosophically oriented.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Jerry, thank you. I really enjoyed talking with you so much.
I always enjoy talking to you, Peter. You've got an amazing head on your shoulders and a big heart.
Thank you so much. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.live. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening.